Okay, recording.
Okay, the title tonight is Pshat and Drash. Maybe I should send out the titles also. Maybe that will be helpful. In any case, in terms of Talmud Torah, the question of Pshat and Drash is really a double question. One is a question of the study of Pshat and Drash, and the other is a question of the formulation of the Drash. Of course, this is something hopefully we'll deal with. In other words, when your Pshat is not something you formulate, Pshat is something which should be there right in front of you. But Drash is something that requires formulation. And the issue is, it would appear that drash is a creative act. We'll talk more about that. But the drash is not right there in front of you. The drash is something that has to be done. You have to darshan it. In theory, pshat should be obvious, and drash should be complicated. But apparently, already at the time of the Amoraim, it was necessary to state what the Gemara says in Shabbos, Tafs and Chachim Lamed Aleph, "Ein hamikra yotzei midei pshuto." The pasuk always maintains its original pshat meaning. And we should never think in terms of the only true Perush being that of the Drash and not of the Pshat itself. Now, the need to say Ein HaMikra Yotzei Midei Pshuto could only come out of a genre or a way of Talmud Torah which assumes drash as the norm. I don't know whether it's what kind of a question that I'm about to ask is. One could say it's a sociological question rather than a Talmud Torah question, but it's a question nonetheless. How does it come about that the pshat becomes so chas v'sholom negligible that you need a mamar chazal to tell you ein hamikra yotzei midei pshuto? The pshat should be obviously first and foremost. And the drash should be a level above that or on top of that or beyond that, but certainly not to take the place of the pshat. I think we are forced to come to the conclusion that because halacha is based so heavily on drash, and many of our halachot would not be understood at all if not for the fact of drash. Therefore, the drash at some point became perceived as the norm. And the pshat got pushed aside to the point that the Amoraim had to be mechadesh, so to speak. Ein hamikra yotzei midei pshuto. The pasuk does not leave its simple meaning. Today, and I mean literally today or the past several decades, there has been a movement in the direction of pshat. There's this extreme search for understanding Pshutoshal Mikra, and a kind of a view of Drash as being an interference in our understanding of the simple Pshat meaning of the Pasuk. It's possible that this goes on in a kind of a pendulum kind of way. That on the one hand, it's necessary to understand that the Torah is not merely its Pshat, and that we have to go much beyond the Pshat, which for our purposes will be the Drash. But that a point could come where, because you're going so beyond, and you're so focused on the Drash rather than the Pshat, that the Pshat sort of loses its weight, its significance, the effort to seek it out. And different generations push in different ways. I'm going to tell you something it says in the introduction of the Malbim to Sefer Yehoshua. He makes reference there to biblical criticism. And he says that the existence of biblical criticism and its sway on at least part of the public, apparently some of the Jewish public as well, is such that the reason this is going on is because we've lost the art of working on the pshat of the psukim. And the need to focus on the pshat is going to be ever present in order to help us overcome the sway of biblical criticism. And then I just take a step for a minute until someone answers. Okay, good. There's a tremendous revelation in that Malbim. It would seem as if the Malbim may not have written his Perush, if not for the fact that there was biblical criticism, which had to be overcome. Now, I'm not saying that that's necessarily the case. It could be he would have written it anyways. But the fact that he introduces Sefer Yehoshua with, which I think the Malbim wrote a Nach before he wrote on Chumash, at least that's my impression. The fact that he introduces his parish to Tanakh, the Tanakh, with the need to overcome biblical criticism implies that this was an effort he decided to make. You know, the Malbim was a gon in Torah Shebaal Peh. He started writing a parish on the beginning of Orach Chaim and at some point stopped. I don't know why he stopped. But it might be that he felt that the need for him to work on Tanakh was overcoming and overwhelming, and he just had to focus exclusively on that. The Malbim's parish on the beginning of Shulchan Aruch is quoted by the Mishnah Berurah very frequently. And he felt his calling was to explain the pshat in the psukim in such a way that it wasn't in conflict with our masoret. Okay, we'll get back to the issue of halacha and the psukim soon enough. Rashi has a unique approach to pshat. And let me say that what the Malbim says explicitly regarding his own parish, the historians say, Professor Grossman, says about Rashi, says about the Pashtanim at the time of Rashi, the development of Pshat then was also in reaction to Christian interpretation of the Bible. And that the Chachamim of the time of Rashi, who often were caught in debates between the Christians and the Jews as to what is the pshat of the psukim. Required that they not simply rely on the Drashei Chazal, but that they work on the pshat, because otherwise they couldn't relate, they couldn't answer back the Christian missionaries in their claims. So that it could be that the whole movement of Pashtanut, of Rashi and the Rashbam and Rabbi Yosef B'chor Shor of the Chachmei Ashkenaz, is really as a result of the need to answer back. In any case, Rashi has a special approach to Pshat. Now, it may not seem special because we learn Rashi. Rashi is the most learned Perush on Chumash. So what do I mean that he has unique? So the answer is very simple. The simple understanding of the psukim would appear to be the approach of the Rashbam and the Ibn Ezra, maybe some of the other Mefarshim, whose approach to the psukim is to, as much as possible, ignore the Midrashim, leave them out, and work on the pasuk in its own perspective, in its own right, in its own way. And that is the seeking out of the pshat. Rashi had a different approach. Rashi says several times in Chumash, I think the first time is in Paragimel of Pasuk Zayin, but it appears in several other places as well, especially in the beginning, but in other places too, that Ani Bati Fresh Rak Shutel Shel Mikra, all I'm here to explain is the pshat. So, those of us who study Rashi have an obvious question. Rashi quotes Medrash after Medrash after Medrash. What do you mean? You're only here to explain the Pshat. You're quoting Midrashim right and left. So the answer is that Rashi quotes Midrashim exclusively to resolve issues of Pshat. Rashi knows all the Midrashim, knows all the Midrashim, the Medrash Rab, and the Medrash Tanhuma. He knows all the Midrashei Chazal. He knows the Midrashim in other Midrashim, on other Svarim, that relate to the Pasuk that he's trying to be Mefarish now. The Medrash that he quotes, if he's quoting a Medrash, is always a Medrash that resolves a problem in Pshat. Rashi was something that many of us are not. He was a great Baal Diktuk. He knew Diktuk, you'll excuse the term, cold. Maybe that's obvious. But it's not always so obvious, because not all Talmidei Chachamim, certainly in our Dora, do. And Rashi was a Mumcha Gadol in the Sifrei Diktuk that were existing in his time. The Machberet of Rabbi Nachum Ibn Saruk and the Sefer of Dunash Ibn Labrat, the famous Daikonim of Chachmei Sfarad. Rashi had this for him. He quotes them all the time, sometimes by name, sometimes he quotes them without mentioning their name. And he knew Diktuk. He knew Diktuk. And he knew Diktuk, not only Diktuk of words, he knew Diktuk of syntax. If the order of the words was awkward for Rashi, it was difficult for Rashi, Rashi was sensitive to it. He was super sensitive to it. And Rashi came to the conclusion that many of the Midrashim are not just there. Many of the Midrashim are there in order to resolve problems in Pshat. Now, we may conclude that the resolution of those problems in Pshat is not a Pshat resolution. That's, I suppose, the response of the Rashbam and the Ibn Ezra to these Midrashim that Rashi quotes. But Rashi would then respond, if we were to hear a conversation between them, he would say, look, you may not like the resolution I gave, but this resolution answers the problem of dikduk that I have here better than anything you can come up with. And, you know, the simple understanding, you know, it starts already with the first pasuk in the Torah. Bereshis bara Elokim es haShamayim es haaretz. Bereshis is a smichut. It should be connected to some sort of indirect object. Bereshis means in the beginning of. In the beginning of what? It should say Bereshis haOlam, Bereshis haBriya, Bereshis haZman, and it just says Bereshis. It doesn't say Bereshis of what? So Rashi already on the first pasuk says, "En mikro amer la darsheni." The word Bereshis calls for a medrash, and therefore Rashi quotes a medrash. Bereshis b'shul haTorah shenikras Bereshis, b'shul Yisrael shenikras Bereshis. And then the Rashi also gives, but it's also the simple pshat that sometimes the word Bereshis appears without as if it were not a smichut, and he quotes the pasuk, not the word Bereshis, but the a smichus appears without the object. And he quotes the pasuk Hoshea, Tchilasti ber Hoshea. But the point is that Rashi feels that the midrashim, many of them, are there to resolve problems in pshat. In pshat in diktuk, in pshat in syntax, in awkwardness in the language itself. And therefore, Rashi, who's out to teach us only pshat, ends up quoting many midrashim in order to resolve, by his standards at least, problems in pshat. Now, the Ramban seems to have a different approach. The Ramban can be critical of Rashi sometimes for quoting midrashim that are not derech pshat, simple pshat. But the Ramban also has his demands on the pshat. One of his demands are that the pshat should fit into the halacha. This was something that was not in Rashi's mind or concern at all. Rashi will freely quote a medrash of one of the Tanoim or Amoraim that is not accepted lahalacha if it's the best explanation of the pshat of the pasuk. Rashi, in dealing with his perush on the Torah, wants the best perush, and he'll use midrashim for that purpose, for the pshat, to resolve the issues of the text. The halacha? Rashi knows halacha very well. Rashi wrote a perush on shas too. He knew shas baal peh. He was Mefarish Shas. And he would paskin the halacha based on the Torah Shabbal Peh. And the pshat didn't have to work out with the Torah Shabbal Peh. It didn't. The Ramban didn't accept that. The Ramban ki'ilu corrects Rashi whenever Rashi quotes a medrash, which is not al-pidin, and says, true, there is such a medrash, it's an opinion of this Tana or that Tana. But the halacha is the following, and based on the halacha, the pasuk should be understood in the following way. And the Ramban will go on to be mefarish the pshat according to the halacha. So what we just did here was present three approaches to pshat, at least two of which are very connected to drash. According to the Rash, Rav and Ibn Ezra, the world of pshat is the world of pshat, and the world of drash is the world of drash. Never the twain shall meet. The only difference between the Rashbam and Ibn Ezra is that Ibn Ezra doesn't seem to be too concerned with medrash at all. He quotes it once in a while if he feels it's helpful for something. The Rashbam, at the beginning of Vayikra, makes a statement that the Iker is certainly the medrash, but there's an Indian in knowing the pshat, and therefore he's going to explain the pshat. But the Medrash is eager, he says. Rashi is looking for Pshat and quotes Midrashim because of difficulties in Pshat. And Nachama Leibovich once said that there are 120 Perushim on Rashi. In the English word is super commentaries. Rashi is a commentary. It is super commentaries. But the widely accepted approach to Rashi is that he's there to answer problems in Pshat. Maybe it's not everybody's approach to Rashi, but that's widely accepted. And Nechama insisted that every, and she said every, because she said every, because I checked it, she said, every Rashi on Torah is answering a problem in Pshat. You may not like Rashi's answer. You may prefer the answer of other Mefarshim. But every Rashi in Torah is trying to resolve an issue in Pshat. So this is the approach of the Rosh Rami Ibn Ezra, that Pshat is Pshat, and that's it. And no Midrashim, very little. Rashi's perish that Midrashim are useful and important in understanding the Pshat, which that comes out of many diukim of syntax and grammar. And the Ramban's approach, who was, of course, the Ramban who did Duke as well, but his focus seems to be understanding Pshat, and when it's a halachic issue, that the halacha should work out with the Pshat as well. Okay. Now, in terms of Midrashim, it's fair to divide the Midrashim, which you all know probably, into two categories, the Midrash Halacha and the Midrash Agadah. Midrash Halacha is on the halachic portions of the Torah, mainly Sefer Vayikra, Parashas Yisro, Mishpatim, certain portions of Parashas Bo, and many portions of Bamidbar and Devarim as well. The Svarim of Midrash Halacha are the Taras Kohanim and the Sifri. Midrash Agadah is on the story sections of the Torah. There are Midrash Agadah on the halachic sections, also on there could be Midrash Halacha here and there on the agadic sections of the Torah. But by and large, these two are separate in this way. But it's not just that there are different svarim for Midrash Halacha and Midrash Agada. The Medrash methodology of the Midrash Halacha is different than the Medrash methodology of Midrash Agada. The Medrash Halacha, first of all, have an author who talks about an approach. The standardized approach is Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Shloshes Remidos, Atar Nidreshes, that there are 13 rules how to dash in the Torah. And it's clear that he was already collecting, because in the Taras Kohanim, which the Medrash of Rabbi Yishmael is the introduction to, mentions that Hillel had seven midos. The seven midos are similar to Rabbi Yishmael's 13. They just seem to include a few of those midos in each one of his. It is an approach of Medrash, and that's meant to be applied to the text of the Torah. Now, in how to understand these Yud Gimel Midos, or the seven Midos of Hillel, there's a machlokas between the Rambam and the Ramban. This machlokas appears in the Sefer HaMitzvos of the Rambam in the second Shoresh, and the Ramban in his Hasagos on that second Shoresh. I'm going to start with the approach of the Ramban, even though the Rambam came first, Because the approach of the Ramban, I think, is what most people tend to assume without being aware of this machlokas. The Ramban's approach is that the Torah is there and is laden with callings, so to speak, of the Yud Gimel Midos Shatara Nidreshes span. Like it were as if you're given a kugel. You'll excuse the metaphor. And the kugel has potatoes in it. It has carrots in it. There's salt in it. There's sugar in it. There could be some matzah meal in there. You know, there are all sorts of things that whoever made the kugel put into the kugel. The only thing is that when you look at the kugel, you can't see those things. The kugel doesn't look like a potato. It doesn't look like a carrot. It certainly doesn't look like salt and sugar. It looks like a kugel. But if you eat it, if you have a certain sensitivity to taste, if you're a chef, you'll be able to say or to think that this is potatoes and this is this kind of potatoes and this is carrots, and it seems like the proportion of the potatoes and carrots are this to that, and it seems like there's this amount of sugar and there's this amount of salt, and you know, you can sort of like identify what's going on inside the kugel if you have great sensitivity, right? So this is more or less how we view the Torah within the context of the Yud Gimel Midos. The Yud Gimel Midos is information, is a way of getting deeper information from the Torah. It's all in there. It's all in there. A full understanding of the Torah requires that you pull out of the Torah the Yud Gimel Midos, the information that you get by applying the Yud Gimel Midos. And when you do that, you come out with tremendous halachos and diyukim and so on and so forth. This is, in other words, basically, it's all there. And the Yud Gimel Midos are the key to getting into it. This seems to be the Ramban's approach. I think this is how we usually think. The Rambam seemed to understand it differently. The Rambam understood that the Yud Gimel Midos Shatara Nidreshes Bahen was something that you apply to the text of the Torah. Kaviyachol, it is it is within our power and our obligation, but it is a human effort to apply rules of exegesis, for lack of a better term, to the Torah, to come up with the results of the application of these midot. And it is kind of like a man-made effort. And the result is that the Rambam would appear to be saying that any halacha which is based exclusively on Yud Gimel Midot is midrabanan. The only thing is that there are many things that are out of Yud Gimel Midot which we already have mesoret about. So they're certainly minat Torah. But that will bring us to the next question. The next question is, what is the a priori relationship between the halachot that the limudim of the Yud Gimel Midot teach us, and the original Torah text? That may sound like a strange question. I think I stopped a bit too long there, but let me tell you the approach of the Halichot Olam, which is also adapted by Rav David Tzvi Hoffman in his Perush Vayikra. Halichot Olam is a sefer written by one of the Gedolei Yisrael at the time of the Shulchan Aruch. He says that all of halakha is masoret, and that the drashot that appear in Shas and in the Midrashim are just there to show the connection between the masoret of the halakha with the psukim, that they are connected. But it's not that the psukim are really the source of the halakha. The source of the halakha is the masoret. And the psukim can be shown to be hinting to the halakha if you apply the yud gimel midot shatara nidreshet. But now that the yud gimel midot shatara nidreshet is really the source of the authority of the halakha is masoret. That's what the Halichot Olam says. Now, that's not at all the impression that we usually get when we learn Gemara, or Midrashim for that matter. It sounds like they're actually deriving it. And it's pretty much clear that the Rambam did not agree with the Halichot Olam. At least not absolutely. The Rambam held that, yes, there are halachot that are masoret, and some of those halachot remain without any source in the Torah, and they become known as what we call halachot of Moshe Mitzrayim. But there are many halachot that are also from Moshe Mitzrayim that can be understood as coming out of the Torah itself via the Yud Gimel Midot. And then there are also halachot which there are no masoret about, and that Yud Gimel Midot teach us them as well, and they are also valid midrashim. That's where the Halichot Olam would disagree. That's what he didn't accept. But the Rambam certainly held that way. Now, what the proportion is between the number of mitzvot coming out of the Yud Gimel Midot, the number of halachot coming out of Yud Gimel Midot Shatar Nidreshet, that do have a masoret, as opposed to those that don't have a masoret, is a machlokas in the Mefarshei Rambam. The tendency seems to be to have thought that very few things have masoret, although some do. There are those who say today, and this is certainly the approach that I identify with, is that a great many of the halachot have masoret to them, but not all of them, of course. And those that do not are based purely on the Gimel Midot Shatar Nidreshet. The Seder. So much for the Medrash Halacha. Now what about the Medrash Agadata? The Medrash Agadata doesn't seem to use Yud Gimel Midot Shatar Nidreshet very much, if at all. What he uses mainly is the yukim in the pasuk. A little extra letter here, an extra word there. And in order to explain the extra letters and the extra words, almost the kind of problems that Rashi is concerned with. But the Midrash doesn't claim to be a Sefer of Pshat. It weaves attachments to the Torah that are not at all obvious in the Psukim. I don't know how else to put it. In other words, the text of the Torah is what someone was once called sticky. There's this problem in the text, there's that problem, there's things that are left out, the things that we don't seem to understand. So the Medrash fills in on missing facts, it fills in on the meanings of extra words, or of words that seem to be out of order, or of extra letters, or of the dots in the Torah, or in whatever it may be. This is the approach of Midrash Agadah, and it comes up with things. Now, within this approach, you can sort of divide the Midrash Agadah into two categories. One is the category where what the Medrash Agadah adds is along the lines of the story itself, but with a deeper understanding or a deeper approach or a deeper, it was even worse than you thought, or it was even better than you thought, or something along those lines. And there's always a question as to whether these midrashim should be taken literally. Sometimes it's pretty clear to me they are, sometimes it's pretty clear that they're not, but there's certainly, there are those who seem to think that there's one rule all the time. I don't know why that has to be. But regardless, these midrashim enhance or deepen the approach of what the Torah is leading us along. Then there are also midrashim that take us in a different direction. Midrashim, let's take a simple matter like Nadav and Abihu, who were over in Avera, and they got killed for it. But the midrashim that talk about Nadav and Abihu as being great people are sort of built a case against the simple reading of the Torah to say it's not so simple like you see. It's not just saying more of what the Torah says. It's saying something counter, something contra. And the need to understand that these midrashim and the need for these midrashim is very powerful. It's just good to be aware that you have both of these kinds. You also have midrashim that change a detail of the story, but don't change the whole story, so to speak. I'll just give you a simple example. Let's take the question of David and Bathsheba. So the Medrash says that Uriah Hiti had written a get milchama, and that therefore, as a result of his being killed, she wasn't really an Eshet Ish, and therefore David wasn't over on the Yisur of Eshet Ish. It's clear from the Nevi'im that the David was over on a terrible Avera, and he says, Chatasi Lashem, and he wrote a parakeet in Aleph and Tehillim as a tefillah to Hashem that he should receive kapara for that Avera. So while the Medrash may minimize the extent of the Avera, it doesn't change the whole story. Masha'en Kane, in the case of Nadav and Abihu, there it seems to work in an opposite direction. Okay, this is pretty much what I wanted to say about Pshat and Drash. There's no question that both are Kiyumim and Nitzuk Talmud Torah. It's my intention, hopefully I'll get to do it tomorrow, to send out topics for every night, and I will no longer be giving the shiur on Sunday night if apparently it's not a convenient time. I'll take your Tzvi's word for it. Whoever's listening to this should have a good day, so you should have a good night. Oh, you know, yours for you, if it's me, it's night. For you, it's afternoon. And Bezrat Hashem, I hope to give the shiur tomorrow. Shalom.